Welcome to NHASCD Spotlight. It's our podcast from the New Hampshire Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development. My name is Bill Carrozza, the Executive Director. Hey, the school year is in its second half now that we're in January. And if you're looking for inspiration for your math classroom, we have a K-8 math conference featuring Steve Linewan, Kristen Hilty, Graham Fletcher, Carolyn Worcester, and Kevin Mahoney. Is coming up March 22nd in Concord. We're doing this conference in cooperation with NHTM. We also have a new signature feature. We're calling it Converse, Collaborate, and Connect. You'll meet colleagues from your grade level in the last session of the conference to discuss your learning for the day. That should be really wonderful. For more information, you can head to our website, nhascd.org, and of course, register for the conference there as well. Well, my guest today is the well-known Sean Slade, someone I met years ago when he was with ASCD. His biography is robust, to say the least. It seems like health promotion, the whole child, has been a theme, though, across his whole career. His educational background began when he was a head of phys ed. He's worked as a senior ed officer for New South Wales and Sydney, project director for West Ed. He's advocated regularly for promotion, health promotion. He worked for ASCD in a variety of positions as director of whole child programs, senior director of outreach. He spent 5 years with UNESCO, the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, a branch of the UN. He's now head of BTS Spark of North America. We'll talk about that quite a bit. It's a branch of BTS focusing on training the next generation of educational leaders, still focusing on the whole child, of course. Sean also regularly writes for publications like EdWeek, ASCD, EdSurge. He's the author of the book, The Power of the Whole, What is Lost by Focusing on Individual Things, forward by your friend and mine, Andy Hargraves, who I respect greatly. Also has a new book coming out as part of BTS Spark. We'll talk about that as well. We could just keep on going with the biography and never hear from you, Sean, but that wouldn't be very much fun. So, Sean, thanks for taking the time calling from D.C. this morning.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks for the invitation, Bill.
Hey, let's start with The Power of the Whole, What is Lost by Focusing on Individual Things, because I think it does a nice job of summarizing your career and your thought process. Again, the foreword by Andy Hargraves, which is always good. The title appears to sort of present the thesis for your life a bit and your career. I talk a lot about the noise of life, the fact that, especially when I was a principal, it was just getting things done all the time and having a really hard time thinking in a macro sort of way. Life was more of a micro process. Talk about why you wrote the book and sort of the overall theme, if you could, for us.
Yeah, certainly. So the Power of the Whole came out about a month ago in December by Roman and Littlefield. And it, in a way, if your listeners know the work of Dan Pink,
of course.
Well, I'm trying to sort of Dan Pinkicize sort of education. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at what is an obvious fact in our world around us, and then applying it to education, and then showing how it's being done, or how you can actually do it, and. And what the Power of the Whole does is, I've always had this view that we've focused so much in education on the individual metrics or the individual activities or the individual duties. Not to say that those things aren't important, but we focus so much of them that very often we lose sight of what we're actually doing, or at the same time, how some of these things that we're focusing on fit together. Now, whether that be focusing on certain content in math and algebra, or certain test scores in third grade, or the ability to do a certain skill in middle school, we focus so much on getting that little thing done that we don't understand why we're doing it. An example might be, and then what we end up doing is, when we realize that that little thing was important, we end up trying to put it back into the system somehow, losing the focus of how these things fit together. An example which is close to my heart and probably close to yours is, as we focus so much in the last decade on academic test scores, No Child Left Behind, especially around math and language arts, we saw a lot of schools and districts focusing so closely on those test scores that they took their eye off the ball on the social emotional learning aspect of the kids and that community bonding focus of the school and the classroom. In the pandemic, we've seen the harm that that does, and we've seen the need of social emotional learning being developed for our students and for our teachers in the school. And what many schools have done, a lot of schools have actually taken that step back and looked at and rediscussed what we're trying to do in the classroom. But other schools have tried to squeeze social emotional learning back into the curriculum by having it be a program or a period or a topic that might be focused on for a, you know, discrete amount of time. So what I'm trying to do is I've seen this happen so much in education where we keep looking for that little golden nugget that we should be focusing on, and we take our eye off what we're doing. In the book, I talk about ecosystems. So the first part of the book is not about education at all. I talk about sort of the world around us, ecosystems, the way we're connected. But then I apply it to education. I apply it to the rise of the whole child as a theme, the rise of the alignment between health and education, the understanding that if we're not healthy, if we don't have positive well-being, that learning and growth is really difficult. And then start to apply it or show how this is happening across the US and also across the world. And then the third part of the book looks at some success stories of where this is happening, whether it's Josh Garcia and his work in Tacoma around whole child, whether it's Ross Hall and his work at the Weaving Lab, which is over in Switzerland, where they're sharing information and taking a broader look at education. So the idea is, in a very sort of quick way, is I want to try and capture what's true in the world around us and then showcase via vignettes and stories and examples, like Dan Pink does, how this applies to education, and then how educators, by changing even just their mindset on what they're doing and why, can start to change their actions in the school and actions in the classroom.
Yeah, Daniel Pink's work and drive, that was the Daniel Pink book that changed me a lot, the whole mindset piece, which is just part of our vernacular now, was really important. It seems like, and I fell into this a little bit too, that school districts have a lack of courage sometimes to look at learning as an integrated process, because we get so worried about, like you said, the test scores, and we lost social studies and science, I think, to a large degree in the process. How do districts gain that courage to do the right thing? And, you know, Grant Wiggins talked about not worrying so much about test scores. You know, he used the analogy of, you know, when you go to the doctor, your test scores are essentially your blood tests, say, but you don't really like study for those blood tests. You just try to live a healthy life. And then the result hopefully is going to be positive. How do we gain that courage, Sean?
Yeah. And I think that is the word. The word is courage. The word is having enough confidence. I'd put the onus there not so much on the classroom teacher. I'd put the onus more on the school leader, because they actually do create and influence the culture of that school, what's important, what's not important. It takes courage from the school leader. And in fact, to be honest, more often than not, we see schools taking a step back and rediscussing or reevaluating what's important in their schools when their schools are actually doing pretty well. And so we rarely see it when the schools are struggling, because it's harder to have that confidence and it's harder to have that courage. What we recommend, because we work with school leaders and district leaders all the time, is it's really changing the mindset, and it's changing the perception of what you're doing in the school and why. you know, we're going to talk about BTS Spark a little bit later on, but it is the work that we're that I'm currently focused in, which is how do you start to have those conversations with school leaders that really have them look at things from a different perspective? How do you start to change that mindset? And that's and that takes place when you have skilled coach and you have tools that can actually assist you and activities that can assist you at looking at things in a different way, asking questions of yourself about what you're doing. It's interesting that you bring up that first, because a lot of the work that we do, and I'm digressing a little bit here, but I think you'll go with me and see the link. A lot of the work that we do around leadership focuses on how do you relate to your team? How do you relate to others? How do you act? How do you react? How do you interact with them? And a lot of the work for school leaders is, how do I get my team rowing in the same direction? We often don't start with, all right, this is the mindset, or these are the skills about how to get others doing this, how to get your team rowing in the right direction. We typically start with, what's your own understanding of your own abilities, your own confidence, your own courage? And because it takes that that courage to act and confidence to actually then start to really deliberately influence your school and your culture. And so it, I think it was, I don't know, might have been our friend Peter DeWitt a couple of months ago in our podcast, which was, you know, to really make change in your school, you have to start with yourself. If you're just passing the activities off to somebody else to do or for them to change, you've got to change yourself, and it might be your confidence and your courage before you're able to actually influence others.
Well, let's segue right into that. I would say coaching for principals is not a very typical activity because I think principals go into the job and they just fly. So because you weren't busy enough with the other book, you wrote a second book this year with BTS Spark and ASCD, Messy Leadership, What We Learned from Coaching 20,000 School Leaders. It's going to be out in May, actually. Talk about the impetus for that book and, you know, why is leadership messy? I know it is.
Yeah. And luckily for me, I didn't have to write that book. So that was written by Alyssa Gallagher, who's my co-head at BTS Spark in North America, and our global director, Rosie Connor. So I was allowed a little bit more time to focus on the work and also dabble in my book as well. But that one comes out in May from our friends at ASCD. And the idea of messy leadership, it came out, it doesn't remain the book in the pandemic COVID time, but that's where the first white paper came out, which was we looked at all of the people we had been coaching across BTS, our parent company, and BTS Spark, to find out how what they were doing and how they were succeeding or not in the first year of the pandemic. And what we found is that those leaders who were, and this is not a criticism of their style, but those leaders who were behaving in a traditional leadership manner, which was, I have the answer, I'm the captain of the ship, follow me, this is the direction we should go, were the ones that really struggled. Because guess what? We've never had a global pandemic in our lifetime. There were no correct answers. You know, almost nobody had the right solutions. So the ones that basically led in a traditional manner did not do well. The ones that actually did well, I wouldn't say thrived, but they definitely, you know, did better than the rest, were those ones that actually did what we think is the opposite of traditional leadership. So they admitted vulnerability. They said, I don't know. What do you think? They asked for different opinions and perspectives. They realized that in order to get the right, their school and their community through this period, they had to bring in a whole lot of allies. What they actually did, which the traditional leader doesn't do, is by opening up a theoretical space for people to come in and provide solutions by saying, I don't know, what do you think? They allowed their team and others to come into that space, provide more solutions, try different things, and it actually empowered that team and that school because they actually now had ownership of that activity. The acronym MESSI, it stood for multiple perspectives, so inviting other people in, emotional connection, so it's that relationship part, being honest, being vulnerable, sensing the future. So if you don't know what the future holds, then try lots of different things, seizing momentum, which is almost like that carpe diem, you know, things are changing. So you need to either get on board now and not just sit back and not do anything. And the last one was a bit of a cheat. It was your ego, but it basically goes back to the courage and the confidence thing we were talking about originally, which is you've got to be confident enough to actually admit vulnerability, show your humanity, and allow others to come in. What they have done, Rosie and Alyssa, with the book that's coming out in May, is they've updated it a little bit to not be so focused on the pandemic, but to be focused on this ever-changing world that we now live in. So I think it's going to be a, it should be a great read, and I believe it's a members book as well for ASCDers. So it should get sent out, you know, to a fair swath of people.
Yeah, always good to have a member book. It gets to a lot of a lot of people, and I suppose the acronym MESSI also gives a little grace for those of us who are leaders and saying this isn't going to be easy, and we need to forgive.
Oh, it plays into that exactly. It's really messy time. And, you know, you were talking before about leaders and their mindset. And we have this idea that leaders should know everything, or we've had this idea that leaders should have all the answers. They should know anything. If we have any question about anything to do with the school or, you know, our community or where we're going, we should just go ask the superintendent or the principal. And what this book is trying to do as well is state, which is obvious to most people, but it's not when you're in the role, this is a really uncertain, messy time. We're going to be in this messy time for the foreseeable future, and you're allowed to not have all the answers. You know, I'm sure you've seen this as well, Bill, but what always gets me in schools is we do certain things for the kids and the students. We know that the teacher in the classroom doesn't have to have all the answers. We know that we want the kids to actually fail occasionally and learn from those things. We want them to develop their more than just their academics. But we often don't do the same thing for the school leaders or the adults. We still expect them to be the sage on the stage. We still expect them to have all the answers. We still expect them to you know, not show their humanity in the school or the in the community. And it's like, if we know that one is good for learning and for the kids and for the teachers, it should be the same thing for our adults in the school and school leaders.
BTS Spark sent out an email, you know, regular email that you guys do on occasion, and you gave some results of a leadership poll. And there's a word cloud. In fact, I'm looking at it right now on my other screen here. It's fascinating and not surprising, but still fascinating. And good old mental health has the biggest piece of the word cloud. You see relationship building, managing expectations. You see, again, not a lot of purely academic topics or concepts, but definitely sort of that health promotion, whole child concept once again.
Yeah, exactly. So this was a sort of ties back into the book as well, because there were key issues and themes that our leaders were concerned about. You know, things like giving feedback or slowing down or, you know, re-empowering their team and so forth. And so we wanted to get some ideas from people currently about what some of their leadership challenges are right now. And it's some of those things you talked about, the mental health, the work-life balance, the safe, unsafe behavior across the board in schools and communities, relationship building. And as you say, they're not talking about academics. They're not talking about tests. They're talking about the way that I would describe it is they're talking about these more human issues and traits. And it's more of a whole educator, whole leader need that's out there. We're seeing leaders who are getting, we've seen kids who are struggling from mental health. We're seeing teachers who are struggling from mental health. We're seeing leaders struggling from mental health. And when you look at the leader, it's not surprising because, again, going back to that sort of leadership archetype, we expect leaders and they expect it of themselves, which is a little bit of the problem, to carry the weight of the school and its problems on their shoulders. It's almost like the higher up you go in your career, when you're a teacher, you look after the health and well-being and growth and concerns of the classroom. And then when you're a principal, you do the same thing, but you're looking after the whole school. And then when Right. you're a superintendent, it ends up being the whole district. And it's almost like a little pyramid where you're actually looking after more and more people's concerns and concerns of the community. But you're also getting fewer people looking after you and fewer peers that you can turn to. And so I think that's why the work we're doing at BTS Spark, I think, is so important, because we're not only looking at the well-being of leaders and their communities, we're also looking at how they can actually develop cultures which are more supportive of them, how their leadership becomes more effective, and how you start to share responsibility, you know, across that environment as well.
There's always going to be a need, I think, for BTS and BTS Spark, but could graduate programs in administration and higher ed do a better job of getting, I guess the answer is always yes to that question, really. Yeah. But how could, I guess is a better way of putting it, how could we do a better job in higher ed now in 2024 to allow new principals, new school leaders to be ready for the shift in leadership needs and skill sets?
I think there needs to be. I think it's actually one of the benefits that's come out of the last couple of years is it sort of opened the door or opened the window of issues that we do need to tackle sooner rather than later. And I think the biggest one in school leader development, graduate programs, is we do a great job in getting them ready to be instructional leaders. We do a great job in having them understand even some of the duties of being a school or district leader. I don't think we've tackled the idea of this is how you become a great leader. Now, forgetting the walkthroughs and the academics and the pedagogy, we do a really good job of that. We do not focus on how do you become the best leader you can be. We did a survey. We do surveys all the time of, you know, pre and post and what people gain from the leadership coaching. And, you know, the ones we put up there are a great result where people say, yeah, I look at things differently. I'm able to reappraise what I'm doing. I understand my role better. I can diffuse conflicts easier. And whenever I'm talking to schools, I say, yeah, look, the results are really positive. One, because we have really great coaches and the material I think is really good, but I would say I also believe that the results are really positive because most leaders have never had pure leadership development at any time. We assume as people go up through their career, through maturity, that they gain the skills of leadership, of listening, of conflict resolution, of leading in uncertainty, of developing shared purpose, of empathy. But we can all probably list on our, you know, at least one hand, if not two, leaders that we've worked with who do not have those skills and may have the opposite of those skills. And so I would also propose that many of these school leaders find this kind of work so important because they've never had that kind of professional learning development. So to go back to the start of your question, what can we do in grad programs is there should be courses around leadership, you know, not just instructional leadership, but how do you actually become, well, here's a little phrase I used recently. We want our teachers to be the best they can at teaching. We should want our leaders to be the best they possibly can at leading. And that, yes, that incorporates instructional leadership, but it also incorporates the bigger circle of leadership as well.
I think leadership has tended to be a lot of information that you learn. It's less than it is a skill set that you need to display. It different than teaching, yeah. where we yeah. talk about, yeah, content knowledge, but also pedagogy being equal. And I'm not sure we focused on what used to be called the soft skills. Well, I guess we still call it that, but that's not to diminish them. They're hard skills for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, funny is I had an article a couple of years ago about that. I'd actually like to reclaim the title of soft skills. I don't love the name because it feels like it's not important.
Right.
But what we were writing in the article was most people know what you're talking about across the community when you say soft skills. So rather than having soft to be equated to unimportant or fuzzy, let's equate soft to being fluid, to being malleable, to being nurturing. It allows people to grow. It can actually adapt to any situation, almost like water. It's going to fill those spaces. So soft can also equate to being something which is necessary, fills the gaps, completes the whole, and allows for growth and development in any circumstance.
Yeah, and is enduring too, I'm sure.
Yeah, there you go.
What's next for Sean Slade? Obviously, you run BTS Spark, or you know, your involvement with that is deeply within what you're doing. But any thoughts for the future for you?
Yeah, I really believe that the work that we're doing at BTS Spark, focusing on leadership development, the whole leader, is really going to become more and more needed, at least throughout my lifetime. I think for the next couple of decades, at least, as we sort of our world becomes crazier, what we're seeing is if you really want to make a difference or a change in your school, your community, you need to have a leader who is not that archetypal type of leader, but someone who can actually help develop and change the processes and the systems. What's on the radar for me is we're working with a lot more global NGOs, such as the Global Business Coalition for Education, which is a bit of a UN group. We're doing work with the OECD. We're doing work out of our UK office with Doctors Without Borders, the Médecins Sans Frontières, because we're seeing these entities understand that if we need to move education forward, it's going to have to be led or in concert with a transformational leader who sees their job not just as a list of duties, and part of the role is always the duties, but it's not just that duties. There is a bigger calling to be an effective school leader. It doesn't mean it's more work, and in fact, hopefully it means that you can share the work and the load more, but it's bringing that purpose back. Besides that, I do have a third book coming out soon as well. Well, not coming out soon, in the works, let's say. So the next one, that maybe we'll do this in a year's time or whenever it comes out, the third book will be, the working title is Genius, How Teams Nurture Individual Brilliance. So I want to get the synopsis for it is, yes, there are individual geniuses out there, but they're pretty few and far between. So showcasing how the school, the culture, teams actually, which are focused around creativity, can actually blossom and create people that we call geniuses. It starts in the real world. So the two examples I start with are the Beatles. You know, what's the likelihood that a couple of likely lads from Liverpool who went to the same school, were not renowned musicians, end up being, you know, part of probably the best or the greatest rock and roll band in history?
Agreed.
And I also talk about from my own country, AC/DC, same story. A couple of working class lads in Sydney, two of which were brothers, end up being members of one of the greatest hard rock bands ever. You know, no, that got developed in their creativity, in their collaboration, in their competition with each other. And if that's how genius is developed, then maybe we should be moving towards that direction in our schools and education system.
Well, anything that talks about the Beatles is good to me. So you must be a Beatles over a Stones fan, is my guess.
Well, slightly.
Okay.
It depends on the mood of the day and the, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't get everything you want, as they say. So, well, this has been great. How do we find out about all things Sean Slade? What's a good place where our listeners can go?
Well, I would go, first of all, go to btsspark.org to find out all things about BTS and basically the leadership coaching that we do. We actually have a webinar. We have webinars every quarter as well. We have one, probably be too late for this podcast, but on Thursday we have one about learning and leading. It'll be up on our YouTube page, which if you Google, go onto YouTube and Google BTS Spark. We have videos there from our talks with John Hattie, Parsi Solberg, our friend Andy Hargraves, Robin Jackson, Michelle Borba, you name it. We haven't had Bill Carrozza on there yet, but we probably do that soon.
Anytime.
Yeah, you name it, we'll have it up there. And if people want to find out about the book, easiest way is to go to seantslade.com.
Okay. I'll put all these links in the show notes, as all they right. always say okay. on podcasts. Sean, thank you for your time. You're such a busy guy, and to take a half an hour with us is a real honor.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Happy to.
Thanks. Well, our mission at NHASCD is to serve as a catalyst for conversation and action to inspire excellence in teaching, learning, and leading. Check out the links to much of what we talked about on your podcast player. You can get us really anywhere in any podcast player. Just search for NHASCD. Don't forget about our K-8 Math Conference featuring Steve Linewan, Kristen Hilty, Graham Fletcher, and more in cooperation with the New Hampshire Teachers of Mathematics. Just register at nhascd.org. You can find us on Twitter X, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm Bill Carrozza, Executive Director, and we'll see you next time for NHASCD Spotlight. Take care, everybody.